There have been hints that the U.S. could be completely out of that much sooner than the September 11th deadline that was set by President Joe Biden.
The topic is Afghanistan. This is Wednesday, the 8th of June, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, hundreds of arrests and a worldwide sting operation. Thousands of immigrants living in the U.S. cannot apply to become permanent residents. Japan's 2020 Olympics Committee may seek more vaccine. Australia pledges to support over 170 athletes from Pacific nations to prepare for the Olympics. And the sound of cicadas, it is all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. troops most likely will not be completely out of Afghanistan until after July 4th. Correspondent Mike Hempen reports.
Officials say the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan is more than 50% complete. Much of it so far has involved removing or disposing of equipment, aircraft, and other war materials. The troops who are needed to secure and execute the withdrawal will be among the last to leave. As early as this week, the top U.S. commander for the Middle East, General Frank McKenzie, will provide Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin with a range of military options for securing the U.S. embassy in Afghanistan and providing counterterrorism support from outside the country once the troops are gone. Mike Hemp in Washington.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg visited the U.S. Pentagon Monday to meet with U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin. VOA's Steve Miller discussed the visit with our national security correspondent, Jeff Selden.
The Secretary General said that the withdrawal is on pace, that it's on track for the early September deadline, which is similar to what we've heard from Pentagon officials as well, who have said that the U.S. portion of the withdrawal is almost 50% complete, and there have been hints that the U.S. could be completely out of Afghanistan much sooner than the September 11th deadline that was set by President Joe Biden. The focus for NATO's part of the withdrawal, though, has been on the safety of the security of its forces as they leave. That has also been on track and so far not been a problem. The interesting thing is that the Secretary General said that with all of this, there is a risk that withdrawing from Afghanistan entails risk, that there's uncertainty. And of course, there's been a lot of concern voiced by critics, both on the right and the left of the withdrawal from Afghanistan, that it's going to leave the Afghan government in an indefensible position where it and its security forces could potentially fall to the Taliban. A UN report released just last week suggested that Taliban commanders, while they talk outwardly of participating in inter-Afghan negotiations, that they've been positioning their forces so what they cannot get at the negotiating table, they can simply take with military force, and that some top Taliban commanders actually favor using military force instead of negotiations.
The Secretary General also said that the global balance of power is shifting with the rise of China and that NATO sees Russia continuing to be responsible for aggressive actions against NATO itself and its allies. What more did the Secretary General have to say?
This is a theme that Jens Stoltenberg has been echoing time and time again over the last several weeks and even going back further about where NATO has to go in order to continue to be an effective alliance. He talks about it as part of the NATO 2030 plan that he's been pitching and that will come up for discussion when NATO leaders meet next week. And a lot of that has to do with, in his words, turning NATO not just into a military alliance, but as a political platform to counter some of what Russia and some of what China are doing in terms of trying to shift the balance of power for the world. And so he's been promoting a need for NATO to come together and push back against that. And that means being not just a military alliance and standing up to Russian aggression and Russian malign activity, as he pointed to in Ukraine, as he pointed to in Belarus, where a plane the other week was forced to land. And so there's a lot that he says needs to be done. And at the same time, it's challenging because he says that with Russia, for example, NATO is pursuing a dual track policy. Well, they're going to contest Russia. They do not want to see conflict with Russia. And therefore, it's essential to talk and it's essential to be a strong political force on the world stage.
VOA Steve Miller talking with our national security correspondent, Jeff Selden. These are some of the stories you'll hear at voanews.com. The Biden administration says the U.S. will target China with a new strike force to combat unfair trade practices. Death toll rises after horrific train collision in Pakistan. North Korea's leader discusses economic policy with senior advisors. Trial begins for U.S. professor accused of hiding ties to China. Many more men in India have received COVID-19 vaccines than women. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. Law enforcement officials in Australia say worldwide raids against organized criminal gangs have resulted in hundreds of arrests after a three-year inquiry using an app designed by the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports on how the operation was carried out in Australia.
Suspected members of drug trafficking gangs have been arrested in 18 countries across Asia, North and South America, Europe and the Middle East. Australia was one of the first jurisdictions to reveal the sting, codenamed Operation Ironside, on Tuesday. Police there said they disrupted drug running operations and prevented mass shootings, including a plot to attack a cafe with a machine gun. More than 200 people have been detained in raids across the country by 4,000 police officers. Large amounts of drugs, cash and some weapons were seized in an investigative operation named Operation Ironside. Australian Federal Police Commissioner Rhys Kershaw.
We allege they are members of outlaw motorcycle gangs, Australian mafia, Asian crime syndicates and serious and organised crime groups. We allege they have been trafficking illicit drugs into Australia at an industrial scale. Sadly, criminal gangs are targeting Australia because it is one of the most profitable countries in the world to sell drugs.
Since 2018, authorities in Australia, New Zealand and the United States have used an encrypted app known as Anom to track organised crime. The technology was designed by the FBI. Undercover agents distributed devices with the application to criminals, who then passed it on to their underworld associates. It allowed investigators to read millions of messages that described alleged murder plots, mass drug import plans, and other schemes. 35 people were detained in New Zealand. Australian authorities say their crime-busting raids were the nation's largest police operation. Prime Minister Scott Morrison says it's been a real success.
Operation Ironside has now charged hundreds of alleged offenders, seized millions of dollars in criminal proceeds, removed weapons from our streets and saved lives, and will continue to. It is an ongoing operation.
Australian investigators say that while the raids were successful, they were just the beginning and that efforts to combat criminal gangs would continue. They did caution, however, that while individuals and syndicates involved in alleged crime had been apprehended, there would always be someone else wanting to replace them in the illicit drug trade. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The operation termed Trojan Shield in the United States was led by the FBI but included the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration, the European Union police agency Europol, and law enforcement agencies in more than a dozen countries. Happening now in Asia, China's Defense Ministry Tuesday denounced a brief weekend visit by three U.S. senators to Chinese-claimed Taiwan on a U.S. military aircraft. They called it a vile political provocation that was irresponsible and dangerous. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for being with us here on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. The U.S. Supreme Court says thousands of immigrants living in the U.S. for humanitarian reasons cannot apply to become permanent residents. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
A unanimous high court says federal immigration law bans people who entered the country illegally and now have what's called temporary protected status from seeking green cards. The case hinged on whether those people were actually admitted to the U.S. under immigration law. Justice Elena Kagan says they were not, writing for the court in a case that pitted the Biden administration against immigrant groups who argued many of the people in question have lived in the U.S. for years and put down roots. The House has passed a bill making it possible for TPS recipients to become permanent residents, but the Senate prospects are unclear. Sagar Meghani, Washington.
Turning our attention to Indonesia, tin miners there are targeting the ocean off Bangka Island after reserves of the lucrative metal dwindled on dry land. The shift has angered local fishermen who say their livelihoods are threatened. Flora Bradley-Watson reports.
Dotted off the coast of Indonesia's Bangka Island are scores of crudely built wooden pontoons. They are equipped to dredge the seabed for deposits of tin ore. Indonesia is the world's biggest exporter of tin. The metal is all around you, from food packaging to electronics and now green technologies. But that same demand has put miners on a collision course with local fishermen. As tin reserves have dwindled on land, miners like Hendra have started encroaching on prime fishing territory.
It's getting harder to mine tin on land, so I have to mine at the sea. There are no more tin resources left on the land.
Hendra shifted to working in offshore mining a year ago and now operates 6 pontoons. He is among scores of so-called artisanal miners who partner with PT Timah. The state mining company pays about $5 for every kilo of tin sand Hendra's pontoons pump up. While it's a lucrative business for him, fishermen like Mariono have seen their profits plunge.
The impact for us from the mining is incredible. You can tell by the shrinking of our catch. We used to get at least 10 kilograms in a day, now only 2 kilograms. And sometimes we come back with nothing because the location has been destroyed by an illegal mining site.
This is why the miners have been pushed out to the ocean. Deposits in the mining hub of Bangka Belitung have been so heavily exploited that the island resembles a lunar landscape. There are vast craters and highly acidic turquoise lakes. Indonesian environmental group WALI says the island is now risky for people to live on. The group has also been campaigning to stop mining at sea. Activist Jezik Amandian.
It's been 20 years that people have been doing illegal mining activity on land or sea. This has caused conflicts in society, especially with the fishermen. Also, more importantly, on the environmental impact, mining sites along the coast have caused damage to mangroves.
In a statement, Timah said it communicates with fishing communities to improve their catch. It says it has built artificial reefs to help restock the sea in line with regulations. Authorities have cracked down on the tin industry from time to time, particularly illegal mining. But for these unlicensed miners on the island of Bangka, the lure of rising tin prices is too good an incentive to pass by.
That was Reuters' Flora Bradley-Watson. This is VOA Asia.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia, China has approved the emergency use of the Sinovac COVID-19 vaccine for those as young as 3, according to the drug maker. China is the first country to offer the inoculations to young children. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue with VOA Asia. Japan's 2020 Olympics Committee may seek further vaccine donations to make the rescheduled games as safe as possible. That according to Tokyo's 2020 CEO after a board meeting Tuesday, stressing there had been no talk of further delays. The Olympics have already been postponed by a year amid global concerns over how organizers can keep volunteers, athletes, officials, and the Japanese public safe when they begin on July 23rd after a fourth wave of infections. Tokyo 2020 CEO Toshiro Mutu flatly denied there had been any talk of a cancellation or further postponement at the executive board meeting. The Australian government and the Australian Olympic Committee pledged on Tuesday to support over 170 athletes from 11 Pacific nations to prepare for the Tokyo Olympics and Paralympic Games. Brian Wood reports.
Australia pledged to help athletes from Pacific nations prepare for the Tokyo Olympics this summer. Australia's Foreign Minister Maurice Payne said the Pacific Oz sports program will support nearly 200 Pacific athletes.
Ultimately, we're going to be able to support 170 athletes, Olympians and Paralympians across the Pacific, in their Tokyo preparation from 11 Pacific countries. It's about coaching, it's about travel, it's about accommodation, it's about medical support. It's about enabling participation in those pivotal, final, qualifying events.
The partnership will alleviate difficulties faced by Pacific athletes, like the cost of training and qualifying for the Olympics. Australia's head of the Olympics Committee, Matt Carroll, said he's hopeful the partnership will help athletes today and tomorrow.
By their own example, Olympic and Paralympic athletes deliver messages of resilience, commitment, hard work to the communities throughout the Pacific. The important messages of health and exercise, using the power of sport to build better communities.
Although postponed last year, the Tokyo Games are set to start near the end of July.
Reporter Brian Wood. Making headlines in Asia, overseas journalists covering the Tokyo Olympics will have their movements tracked by GPS, according to the Games president on Tuesday, and could have their passes revoked if they break the rules. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We continue on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. A new Senate report details sweeping failures around the January 6th attack on the Capitol building, but does not delve into the role played by former President Donald Trump. Correspondent Julie Walker reports.
Bipartisan review found broad government, military, and law enforcement missteps before the attack. It also found a breakdown within multiple intelligence agencies and a lack of training and preparation. The senators criticized the FBI and Homeland Security for downplaying online threats and for not issuing formal intelligence bulletins. The report recommends giving the Capitol Police Chief more authority, giving better equipment to law enforcement, and streamlining intelligence gathering. It does not look at root causes, including the role played by Trump, as he called for his supporters to fight like hell to overturn his defeat. I'm Julie Walker.
The ocean data that scientists seek to understand climate change, marine life, and plate tectonics can be expensive and risky together. Matt Dibble looks at a company that uses seafaring drones in place of research ships.
This new vessel plying the waters of San Francisco Bay has no crew on board, and is powered only by the wind and sun. It's being prepared for an important mission.
The oceans cover over 70% of the world's surface, but they're really virtually unexplored. Less than 7% of the deep ocean has been mapped. That's what the Southern Surveyor is really designed to do. What it gives us is a three-dimensional, beautifully detailed picture of every topographical feature down there.
Saildrone also has a fleet of smaller autonomous vessels that have successfully sailed the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans and circumnavigated Antarctica. They are packed with sensors to collect data related to weather, climate science, and marine life. Saildrone sells the data to government, scientific, and commercial organizations.
It's really important to measure the oceans and to understand exactly what's going on so we can help not only predict the future, but possibly help change the future.
Surveyor also has sensors, but its main mission is to map the deep ocean floor using sonar.
Traditionally, research or mapping has been done by ships, very large ships like you see behind me, with a crew of 40 to 50 people on board, burning thousands of liters of diesel fuel per day. By harnessing the wind power, we can survey for months on end without coming back to port. I mean, it really removes the risk of putting humans in remote, dangerous places.
The vessels are given a destination but work out the details of navigation themselves using onboard artificial intelligence.
For a thing to survive in the open ocean for 12 months by itself and set itself back really is a very, very tough challenge.
Sail drone vessels are proving they can survive these missions and collect data vital to understanding our watery planet. Matt Dibble for VOA News, Alameda, California.
Billions of cicadas are emerging in the eastern United States after 17 years underground. They'll make their presence known for 4 to 6 weeks. The bugs are especially conspicuous in the Washington, D.C. area, where a newspaper columnist tells their story and invites his readers to do the same. VOA's Laurel Bowman has more.
Here's one right here.
Are you afraid?
I'm not, because they don't bite. They don't sting. Nothing right at you.
John Kelly is a columnist for the Washington Post newspaper. For decades, he's also studied and written about the insects known as cicadas.
I'm fascinated by just how the cicada does what it does, the strange life it leads. You know, it lives underground for 17 years, and somehow it knows when to come up. And not only, you know, one cicada, but billions and billions of cicadas all get the message at the same time and start crawling up. And then it's like something, you know, from a science fiction movie. They're in one form and they grab onto a tree and they change into another form and they break out of their shells like in the Alien movies, and then they fly away.
Across the eastern United States, billions of cicadas have emerged after 17 years underground. The sound of mating males is grand but deafening. It can reach 100 decibels, the loudness of a lawnmower or a chainsaw. Kelly is so certain that his fellow Washingtonians share his fascination with cicadas that he has challenged his readers to a cicada poetry writing contest.
These poems just keep coming, just like the cicadas. They're endless. Like, here's a nice one. My purpose in life was to mate me. I sang for a female to date me. My song made the neighborhood hate me. And then came a squirrel and ate me. I think the best poems are going to be funny. They're going to be clever. And maybe they will be poignant. I'm hoping for some poems that really play up the fact that, you know, cicadas have this unusual life where they live most of their time underground and come up to the surface only for a few weeks, and that they make the most of their time on Earth. And I want poems that explore the poignancy of that, and how maybe we can learn something from the cicadas, that we should live our life to the fullest in the brief time that we have on this planet, too.
Hundreds of entries have swarmed in for Kelly's Cicada Poetry Writing Contest. The winner gets his or her poem published in the Washington Post, a fitting tribute to this unique creature, which will mate and die within weeks. Laurel Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
Bones discovered in Australia 15 years ago belonged to the largest dinosaur ever found in the country, according to Australian officials. Queensland Museum Scott Hucknall said Monday that he estimated the dinosaur named Cooper to measure nearly 30 meters long and weigh more than 60 tons.
I equate it to something like 1,400 red kangaroos, something ridiculous like that. Huge, huge animal.
Tourists gathered in Runnamunga to see the dinosaur bones on display at the museum. Hochtel said it is the first time researchers can verify that Cooper is in fact Australia's largest dinosaur. He added the research is a long process of preparing the fossils and comparing them to other species of dinosaurs from around the world. The bones were found by Robin McKenzie and her husband Stuart while they were mustering cattle on their property near the southwestern Queensland state town of Erromanga in 2006. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter, @VOA Asia. And you can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thank you to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, includes Jim Stevenson, Amy Hybels, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman. Stay safe and enjoy your day.